and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marvel.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 627. And no, the episode would not be nearly as funny as this beginning, as this opening would tease it might be. No.
We're out of practice.
Yeah, we were. Yeah. This is what happens when we skip a week.
Technically, kind of two, right?
Yeah, probably. From a recording perspective, it might be more like a week and a half, really. We are back post-Thanksgiving.
That's right. We're here to do another episode, finally, of LanternCast Presents Green Lantern, Green Arrow.
Pretty much.
I originally toyed with the idea of just doing any time we covered a Green Lantern, Green Arrow story to just make it a part of that spinoff.
But we can tag it. I've kind of done that when we've done anything that relates to the Spectre, kind of tagging it into pre-birth. So I certainly can tag it.
Maybe we should come up with a separate tag that I don't know. We'll talk about it. We try to keep this episode succinct. Immediately goes off on tangent.
Now, whose fault is that, Chad?
All right, so tonight we are talking about Green Lantern number 29, which is 596, it looks like, of the legacy numbering, so we're getting close to 600. It is titled A Betting Man, with writer Jeremy Adams, artist Carmine D. Giandimeco, colorist Romulo Fajardo Jr., letterer Dave Sharp, cover artist Eddie Barrows, and it's kind of hard to read at this scale. But somebody Ferreria and Romulo Fajardo Jr., and then we're not going to get into variant covers, assistant editor Jillian Grant and editor Paul Kaminsky. So we open up in Star City, where Ollie is taking on a pair of a team of what looks like mercenaries. He's talking a bit in the inner monologue about how real estate in a specific section of Star City is being bought up. Prices are being raised, police presence lowered. So he's just sort of checking into the area, and then he gets confronted by this group. So his only way out is to jump through the window of this skyscraper he's in. And as he falls, hope the Justice League got his call from the previous issue, at which point Hal shows up and catches him with a construction cat, which Ollie, of course, finds humiliating. And they catch up just real quick before the two of them go up in a construct elevator to get off on their floor to take on the bad guys. And then later on, they commiserate over some drinks at the local bar and talk about what's going on. And Ollie can basically sense that something is off with Hal. And Hal's talking about, hey, what he saw in that vision. And I'm sure it's nothing I need to worry about. I just need some time to figure it out and clear my head. And it's right then that somebody else in the bar starts, starting up a fight and causing a ruckus. So the two of them decide to, take on the local ruffians, I guess, at the bar and clean sweep. And it's at that point that Mr. Terrific gets back to them about what he figured out after those mercenaries were arrested. And the data that he's got on it is that a company called Omega Construction has been buying up those properties, just like they said. And it happened after the time Darkseid exploded on the Watchtower, which we saw in the original DC All-In special.
The now classic. Every damn thing now is a now. Could you please stop with that, for the love of God? They did that with Dark Christ. It's such a blatant circle jerk. Just please stop. Nobody considers anything of any of these classics, and it'd be too early to determine whether they were going to be anyway. So stop the self-flagellation here.
So they decide to get in. They're immediately accosted by robots. Ollie says he hates robots, to which Hal responds, "I'm telling Red Tornado." And Hourman, yes. And the Metal Man. And they keep going through levels of robots and taking them on. They come across this empty white space, and Hal uses his ring in a unique way to sort of bathe the room in emerald light, but uses the construct to sort of check for any specific weaker points in the floor or wall than any of the rest of it to sort of find wherever the secret entrance is. He uses then a construct can opener to cut open said area, and the two of them jump down to be confronted by Extingency, which is a person who has somehow been co-opted into this company as serving as basically a robotic guard for this facility, which turns out to be just basically somebody who's seen the writing on the wall specific with all this Omega energy or the apocalypse type stuff that's been happening in the DCU as of late. And basically, as Ollie puts it, you built a rich kid's arc because you thought the world was ending. That is essentially what it is. He tells them all of this because he's distracting them as a giant robot punches its way through the ceiling to take them on. They try and figure out how to take it out. They can't really make heads or tails of it. So suddenly, you know, as they get thrown away for the second or third time by this robot, Ollie says, "I think I'm going to need a bigger arrow," which Hal takes literally, creates a giant construct bow, lets Ollie aim it with his own bow and shoots it at the centerpiece of the robot. And as the robot tries to take out the construct, it destroys the construct of the arrow. But within the construct of the arrow is the actual arrow, which actually ends up piercing the robot, exploding it, shutting it down. Everybody comes on the scene of the Justice League to, you know, do some cleanup and says, "Hey, you know, they've been picking up on chaos and corruption all over the world. You know, we'll see if we know what's coming. Maybe Extingency can be of use to us. We're clearly setting up whatever is coming." They reference DCKO in one of the narrative boxes. So we're doing a bit of tie-in stuff. Hal talks about, you know, "I need to just piece together what's going on in my head." And Ollie just makes a suggestion. "Well, we know one guy who's good at detective work," essentially. And then Ollie bids him farewell, calls him a brother, and says, "If you ever need anything, reach out." And he's like, "Get out of here." And Hal says, "Well, as much as you hate robots, I hate Gotham." So next issue, obviously, we're going to get a Batman team up.
Yep, because no one can figure out the mysteries of the Book of Oa like Batman.
Yeah.
At least it's not Joe. At least it's not Joe. Speaking of hating robots and hating Gotham, God, I hate Darkseid more than all those combined. I don't care about building towards, you know, this absolute universe crossover, which apparently all of this is. I don't give a rat's ass about any of this. If there's one character that needs to be retired from 10 years, a moratorium for 10 years for DC stories, it's Darkseid. As a one-off issue, which means absolutely nothing as far as what's really going on in the Green Lantern title, this was fine. It was good characterization of Hal, which is what Jeremy does best. You know, there was obviously the natural rapport between Ollie and Hal was fantastic. I guess it's almost like a palate cleanser, because literally other than him talking about the vision in his head, it has absolutely nothing to do with anything that's been going on in the last few issues of Green Lantern. We don't see anything with the Guardians. We see nothing with Krona. We see nothing on Oa. Nothing, you know, so nothing with Kyle, nothing with any of these other characters that have been in this book. I don't know how much we're going to get next issue either if we're dealing with Batman. I like to think they'll do a little bit of something next issue to just so you don't completely forget about what's going on. Also, you have to start what's occurring at the same time. Simultaneously. I mean, I thought it was a good issue. I just maybe it was a little disappointing just because it had so little tie-in to what's going on in the actual Green Lantern book, and more, again, like you mentioned, more of a tie-in to other crap that I don't care about that's going on in the DCU as a whole.
Yeah. No, I feel what you mean, but I like it because it has nothing to do with what's going on. So, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I can see that. I mean, it can go either way with that. I mean, because we haven't been overly thrilled with the way things have been going direction-wise in the main book, kind of having a detour and a one-off or a couple of off as it's going to be. Like, this kind of reminds me of Hero Quest for a little bit, like the Kyle stuff, like that multi-issue.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
When he's trying to figure out what's going on. That's what this reminded me of automatically with, what was it? Was it Shazam, Wonder Woman, and Batman?
I think. Shazam, Wonder Woman, Batman.
That's what this kind of reminds me of, or what it's almost going to be an homage to. I forget if there's two or three parts of this, or if it ends after the Batman part. But that's
no, because Green Lantern 31 is guest starring Barry Allen, so it's
okay.
It's
so it is going to be okay. Yeah. So who knows? Maybe that is a little bit of an inspiration for what these beat wise what Jeremy's doing. So I guess I'm less like you said. Let's see what next issue is like. If we don't get any tie-ins directly, or if we don't see what's going on with Krona, we don't see where the Guardians are, and we don't have, like, if this goes on for like three straight issues where we get nothing at all, not even like a couple of panels, then it's going to kind of seem like this is really out of left field to a certain extent, unless we get something really, really relevant, as far as like if we get to really see what Hal saw fully, get if Hal gets to, whether it's a mental block or something preventing from remembering it. And now all of a sudden,
well, I imagine he's going to see Bruce for maybe the first thing Bruce is going to do is like some sort of meditative thing to get him to recall specific details, because otherwise he's just going off of what Hal is telling him. And if Hal can't describe exactly what he saw,
yeah,
to Batman, then there's nothing for Batman to help him with. He has to be able to tell him what he saw. So I think I would imagine Bruce is going to start off with some meditative stuff he learned.
But he's Batman. He can figure it all out.
But not just that, too. It's I can almost see some story beats that I could expect from that, like Hal being, you know, thinking meditation is stupid and having a hard time centering himself, or what, you know what I mean? Like I see that crap as just the easy stuff to do. But part of me is trusting Jeremy in the process, because the team up with Ollie felt familiar. It didn't feel like it was trying to check things off a list in terms of the way in which Hal and Ollie have traditionally interacted. The things you expect to see when you see these two characters together on the page. Like for a little while there, you could just talk about, you know, because of obviously the popularity of Green Lantern, Green Arrow, you would have to throw some sort of reference to them actually saying the words hard traveling heroes, or Ollie would have to make some sort of, you know, one of them call the other one a fascist, the other one call the other one a liberal, you know, like a hippie or whatever. Like, so it felt familiar without feeling overdone. So even though I'm seeing what could happen, like I feel like I'm seeing the story beats in my head, I think maybe I should backpedal on that, because he didn't do that with this.
I agree. I mean, there's certainly opportunity there. Plus, it's always fun on some level to see Batman and Hal deal with each other, because there's always that tension, even though obviously in the real world there should be a lot less tension now than there was in the Emerald Twilight's beginning Spectre, early post Green Lantern Rebirth era, that there should be more like what their relationship used to be. Just the conflicts are going to be mostly because their personalities are completely different. Then they approach things completely different. But still, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a cool thing, because let's be honest, we don't really see Batman in the Green Lantern title all that often. It's been a long time, I think, since we saw it.
Yeah, probably since Green Lanterns, right?
When Simon was the latest Green Lantern that was Bruce's. It was Kyle, and that basically it was anybody but Hal at that point, which was kind of garbage. But yeah, it's been a long time since it's a fully Batman centric Green Lantern issue. So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but I do hope we get a little, like I said, I hope we get a little bit more related to plot of what's actually going on in the major stories that are the breadcrumbs they've been laying out here, because if they don't, then it becomes kind of questionable as time goes by about, it may get frustrating after a while, even though it's only going to be maybe three issues of this. It's good seeing Hal team up with, you know, with two of these two people that he's close to, and one, and his, you know, his frenemy. And Batman, but it still seems like that would be without any real tie in, other than maybe getting inside Hal's head. If we don't know what's going on in the rest of the universe and all those dangling plot points that were left, that three straight issues of that might be a bit, people might forget, because Lord knows, you know, it's like, oh yeah, we kind of forgot all about that.
I mean, I'm excited for it. I think you calling it Jeremy Adams' Heroes Quest is probably just clicked in my head and made it exciting for me, because I've been saying I want to bring Hal back to Earth, but I didn't think we got that long enough before we threw him out into space again. So it's obvious we're going to have to throw him out into space again, but for now, we're doing a Hal Jordan characterization piece focused on his relationships with people over three different issues, and we're going to split up. We're going to be in Star City 1, Gotham in the other, and Central City in the last. I think what was Kyle trying to decide if he was going to be a Lantern still, or trying to just work out how to, he was just working out how to be a hero, right?
I think so. Yes, I think so.
And, you know, Hal struggling with something. I think the similarities in there, but, you know, getting outside perspective to try and work out what's going on in your head is always a good idea. So him going to the people he trusts, even if he trusts and doesn't like them, is good.
Yeah.
Do I hope we stay entirely departed from what's going on in the main story? No. So I do agree with you. We can't just totally abandon it, because otherwise my critique then is that the story arc's going to be stretching on too long again, and I'm going to have pacing concerns. But if we get just enough to keep us satiated, then this might be my favorite three issues in a row for Jeremy.
Yeah, I could see that, which of course on the flip side doesn't say much about his arcs overall, his big arcs, this is his third, I guess, major arc, really, if you want to look at it from that perspective. As a mini arc, you'd be correct. This is probably might be the best of the best so far, depending how it goes. But yes, the potential is certainly there.
Yeah. As far as the actual issue itself, I thought the art was okay. I didn't like it at first, but on the second, third read through, I liked it more than I did before. I don't know what I didn't like about it, but there was something that irked me about it. I will say, since when does Ollie have a cape? Have I just not been paying attention? Has he had a cape for the past few years? And it, like, because I know he's got his hood. So it makes sense that it would be attached to something, I guess, and a cape is the next most logical thing. But I thought his hood was like attached to his uniform, his vest thing. I didn't. Has he always had a cape?
I don't. I guess it depends on whether we really think it. I mean, I guess it kind of is a cape. I don't know if he's always had it. I don't think that's brand new. But then again, I haven't read much.
Was that Longbow Hunters? No, he was wearing like the baggy light green thing, and then his hood was a part of his vest. Yeah,
so maybe it is something relatively new.
Yeah, sorry, it just threw me off. I was just like, since when does Ollie have a cape? But no, I liked it. Again, I like the banter, them talking about how I'm going to tell all the metal men and everybody you hate robots. The only thing I was missing here was a reference to Ollie's chili.
I know. I almost thought that it was less of a bar and more of just a restaurant. In fact, when you were doing the recap, I almost thought you were going to say they were eating chili, just because I hadn't read the book, hadn't read this until, except for tonight. I hadn't read it since the first time I had, like over a week or so ago. So I didn't think they were eating chili, but I said, well, maybe I missed that, because it would make perfect sense that they were. But you're right. It seems like Jeremy went out of his way to not give us too much of the fan moments there that you would think, the beats that everybody would expect. So
for sure, I also kind of like that Ollie was wrong in a way, because where was it? He said, maybe that smile works on Carol and the rest of them, but not me, bud. What's going on? He's wrong, because Carol picked up on something, that something was going on with Hal, but she just let Hal be Hal and go work it out with Ollie.
Yeah, though he could have just been being a smart ass and things like that. And
yeah,
just for saying that, you know, the Hal Jordan charm might work on some people, but it doesn't work on me regardless. So you're not going to bluff your way through this one. But yeah, I agree. But then again, that could be more indicative of what Jeremy's trying to say about Hal's relationship with Carol these days.
Yeah.
Compared to what it used to be.
I thought we had a wasted moment, because we see Carol is clearly on the scene at the end of this. And they kind of opted for the the two of them just saying goodbye to each other and him immediately flying off to Gotham. Although it kind of looks like, because we only see her for two panels when she's flying down with Martian Manhunter, and but the panel where she's next to, what is that, Blue Beetle? It looks like she's turned to face them. So I don't know. Maybe she's just kind of watching off in the distance, knows what's good, you know, letting him be him and have his moment with Ollie. But I just thought it was weird that she was on the scene and then he just flies off to go to Gotham, especially with the solicits and everything that indicating that he's going to propose to her soon. Her being in the vicinity and him not having a conversation with her or just checking in with her again, that seems weird.
Yeah, but we know on some levels that's the counterbalance, that as much as he's been developing Carol and Hal's relationship, there are some weird aspects to how they interact, pro and con, that don't seem very Hal and Carol like at times, and be one of them, or she's just, he assumes she's just going to see this as an extension of his trip to see Ollie, but that is a major assumption.
And for those of you not aware, the last thing I'll say, because I wanted to mention it, if you're looking, because I found what I was searching for online in the background. If you aren't aware, Ollie makes some really good spicy ass chili, and if you want to make it yourself, they actually published a recipe in the 2002 Green Arrow Secret Files and Origins. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go pick up the comic book to find it, because if you Google it, you'll find it very clear as day. I actually copied it down, and I meant to make it at one point, and I just never got around to it, but I do have the recipe on my phone, and I've been meaning to make it. But if you want to try Green Arrow's chili, you can.
Who needs X-Lax when you have Ollie's chili?
Last time, I think there was like a recipe that we talked about. It was the Larfleeze Christmas special, right? He had like Larfleeze's cookies or something. There was some sort of recipe in there in the Larfleeze Christmas special.
Yeah, that might be correct. It's been so long since I remember that. Read it, but yes, you gotta think you're right.
All right. Yeah, next issue, Gotham. So we'll be there, I guess. So what's next?
Let's do Green Lantern sales. This will be pretty quick. As we talked about last month, there were two issues of Absolute Green Lantern in the chart for September. So October has absolutely nothing, which is just luck of the draw. They both, from a week release perspective, both the last two issues at the time had dropped in September. So there's nothing in October. So I guess we're gonna have to wait till the November numbers come out later this. Or actually, probably will be more in January to find out exactly when, to see how to see if there was any trend with Absolute Green Lantern dropping at all, whether again it was just the fact that they had two issues come out in 1 month, which probably is the case since that's the only other time the second issue of Absolute failed to do as well and kind of like bottomed out, was the only other month when they had two issues drop in the same month. So we have, looking at the Green Lantern issues, we did have Green Lantern Corps number 9 went from 130 all the way up to 115. So it moved up, still not good, but it made an improvement. Green Lantern 28 went from 143 all the way up to 118. That is still that's a very good improvement. But again, Green Lantern should not be selling anywhere close to 100, let alone out of it. And perhaps in a way, the biggest victory here is the fact that Green Lantern Dark number 7, the finale, which had been out of the top 200, had been unranked previously, moved all the way up into the top 200, all the way up to 169. So pretty much, I guess, looking at this, I think the only other issue that was ranked, I think, might have been 17, or the second issue, I think, I'm looking at this when it was number 176. So either way, Green Lantern Dark did not sell well. But it is somewhat interesting that I know it's the finale, but still, if people weren't reading the entire series, then why would you care about reading the last issue unless you thought it was going to have some relevance somewhere else? But still, since you know it exists in its own universe, it is a little interesting, unless this is a word of mouth kind of thing where people said, hey, that's really good, or it sets up maybe a nice status quo that they might pick up on down the road. But either way, I think that's. Yeah. I think we take it for what it is because we both overall like Green Lantern Dark and we thought it ended mostly on a positive note. So I think that's kind of cool that at least the audience seemed to respond to that, certainly better than the previous issues had.
Yeah, and I really don't want to undercut that message, because I do think it was it ended very well, and I think it deserved for the final issue to raise up in the ranks there. I will say it's possible the speculative market had something to do with it, because sometimes, one, the reason might be that final issues can be like where people are fully named or introduced or whatever, so it technically counts as a first appearance. The other reason, and this goes kind of hand in hand with that same thing with like people buying things for the speculative market and having the first appearance of something, is one of those Green Lanterns in the Emerald Space or whatever it is they call that. They actually said Oa, right? So in that space that she was talking to in that dream state, including the previous tangent Green Lantern, one of them talked about how she was born a male. So I think some people...
Our
first trans representation in the Lantern Corps, and people wanted the first appearance of the first trans Green Lantern, stuff like that. Again, that person isn't given a name. It's talked about for 2 seconds. Even the speculative market doesn't typically give that much of a shit about something that takes up that little space in the issue. But I did see some people talking about it online and being excited for that. So it may have picked up a little bit due to that,
but probably not
picked up entirely due to that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Cause as we know, which would make sense, cause it's an extremely, extremely, extremely small part of the population, that it's unlikely that even if everybody from a certain group rallied around something, it's still so small that the impact would be almost negligible, and then you know that people are not monolithic anyway.
Yeah, and that's why I wanted to make sure it didn't undercut.
No, I know.
I do think it's legitimate that it made its increase in the sales of its own merits as opposed to anything speculative. So.
Yeah, I think it's mostly, if anything, it's word of mouth, and the fact that people said either people really liked the issue or people were encouraging people heading into the last issue that, hey, you know, you may not have been reading this, but it's like I think it's going to end well, or certainly after you read it, it's like, yeah, it's a pretty satisfying ending overall. Plus, it could be a jumping off point down the road, you know, the belief or the hope that you're going to see this character again, and this way, you know, you could, like you said, partially get on the ground floor, but also so you're going to understand what this means, and going forward, it, you know, you understand the status quo, that kind of thing. So
I will say that streamer I've been mentioning relatively recently is Sidion. I've been following her because she's a big gaming streamer. She's part of a big gaming org called OTV. So she's got multiple different social media. So she actually has two TikToks, like one for her cosplay and her gaming stuff and promoting her stream and all of her, you know, all her published content. The other one is like a more personal, like, her hobbies type of stuff, and I follow that one, and that's the one she's been posting her comic content on, because she was always a comic band fan, but you know how we all like put it down after a few years and then come back to it. She's in her coming back to it phase, so she's been posting what she's been getting. She ended up completely dropping Absolute Green Lantern, as I mentioned, but she's still, but a lot of us, me included, because I'm in her comments talking about, based on the stuff she said she'd like, because everybody talked her into reading Something Is Killing the Children, which she ended up loving. So I immediately was like, if you love Something Is Killing the Children, try Green Lantern Dark. She was hesitant. She tried Green Lantern Dark. She's like 3 issues in. She said she loves it. So it's, you know, it's making waves with people outside of Green Lantern circles, it looks like. So that's good.
I would agree.
All right, what's next?
All right, so let's roll through what I've seen, because it's been a couple of weeks, so trying to go in order. So Wicked for Good, we didn't get a chance to discuss that. I liked it. I mean, obviously, I think it's not going to, I think, have the impact that the first part did, which would make sense, because the first act, like most musicals, but the first act of the musical was far superior to the second anyway. So it's not surprising that it seems like the reaction to the first part was, the second part is not as positive as the first.
The most popular musical numbers are on the first act, right? I've never even seen
it. Yeah, I mean, and that tends, and I saw, And I think that's not uncommon in musicals, because musicals use the two-act structure as opposed to the typical three-act structure. So a lot of the good stuff always in musicals end up in the first act. And it seems like, yes, it's very common for the best songs, most of the memorable songs, to there are some good songs in Wicked for Good in the second part, but there's not like a Defying Gravity or maybe even Popular and things like that. But I liked it. I thought it was a good end. It's been a while since I had seen the play, so I was not disappointed in how they handled that. Saw Five Nights at Freddy's 2 last week. I haven't seen the first one since it came out. I think I liked the first one better. I think the atmosphere was better. It was fine for what it is. Obviously, it still did fairly well financially. It didn't do as well as the first on opening weekend.
And you have no history with understanding of experience with the gaming, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but it still worked as a franchise as a whole.
You understand, even the first one, you understand the mythology. And yes, this one dives deeper into the mythology. Clearly, it would mean more to you if you play the game and understood the lore and some of the characters they bring in. It's like, you would understand it more on what they're setting up at the end of this one for if they do another one. But I think overall it works. I think it worked. I saw Stranger Things. I finished the first four episodes of the final season of Stranger Things. I thought that was fairly effective. It definitely is a show, like a lot of streaming shows, that is, and some of it was COVID related, but this is definitely another show that's gone on way too long, and that the gaps between seasons, and that's something I really think streaming shows and pay cable really need to work on. Some things you know are going to be successful, not Stranger Things, but like House of the Dragon. You could have friggin' greenlit two seasons of House of the Dragon right off the bat, instead of waiting for renewal and then having to write the scripts and bring people back together again, and then guarantee you're going to have a year and a half to 2 years always between seasons. I mean, network TV has been able to figure this out for like 70 years. So I think they can do a better job with that. I thought it was good. It sets up an interesting final few episodes coming out on Christmas. But so that was that. And the only other thing I have is, which you will find somewhat interesting, is I watched Shin Godzilla for the first time.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but what'd you think?
I actually, the thing that I find interesting about it, which was, it's like 90% politics and how continuity of operation of governments work and the importance of that. but yet it works for me in the context of how they're doing it. So it's like about 10% Godzilla and 90% how governments would deal with crises like this and the literal fallout of this. But the one thing I would say is that the woman who plays the senator's daughter, the Japanese-American chick, God, she's gorgeous. And going along with that, I also watched Godzilla vs. King Ghidorah. All this is on HBO Max, which we'll talk more about down the road.
Oh, like one of the old, like,
the 1991 one with the time travel. But the time trap, did you watch that one?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's so many Godzilla, just like Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, there's like three or four of those movies.
No, I know, but this was when they fake the time travelers come and say, oh, Godzilla's going to destroy Japan in the future, so we're going to come back.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But
the thing interesting about that is that the idea, they kind of echo the minus one concept about Godzilla being just a regular dinosaur on an island that they find during World War II. I kind of like the duplicate origin of that. But I like that one, too. It's not as good as Shin Godzilla, I thought, but it was cool.
Elaborating on Shin Godzilla, but it's been a while since I've seen it. The thing I really liked about Shin was the fact that it was like because it was sort of like, what if we never did any Godzilla movies and we're just going to start it from today or whatever. I like that it sort of maintained kind of the same message as the original Gojira film, you know, what humanity does to itself, that this is our own, this is a hell of our own making type of a thing. And I like that it sort of incorporated that into the design of Godzilla. Cause I'll be fully honest with you, until we get, you know, end result Shin Godzilla, I hated the other ones. I hated the pre-evolution thing. But it makes sense that this mutated, horrid creature that looks like it's almost in pain just existing, you know, looks the way it does. So it almost becomes this, you know, in a way, Godzilla is supposed to be a mutant. It should be abhorrent of nature as opposed to looking all, you know, ancient and powerful and perfectly put together like Godzilla of like the legacy universe does. I will say though, I still, as powerful of a display as his atomic breath is, I still hate it because it's too powerful.
And plus you have the tail shooting and the dorsal fin shooting and all this.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, I mean, the tail shooting conceptually isn't as crazy as you would think, considering it all powers up together. But yeah, there were some interesting concepts in it. And again, it was weird at first because first when I'm watching it, it's like, well, is this thing really, is this thing Godzilla, or is this thing going to be, or is this what's going to draw Godzilla out? And then you realize, and then you kind of thought it was Godzilla because you saw the tail and you saw the dorsal, the spikes. And then it was like, okay, but the face looked so goofy to start with. But then once it starts, obviously relatively quickly after it hits land and it starts evolving into its next phase. And it's like, oh yeah, this is actually once it roared the first time, then you knew it was Godzilla clearly.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting concept. But again, to me, it was the idea that the politics of it was pretty fascinating, I thought. So
did you see it as part of that the fact, because then they just released a 4K version, so it's like it's back in the zeitgeist now because there's some super enhanced edition out there.
Well, something. Yeah, because it was in theaters like a few months ago. It just got added into HBO Max. So that's the reason why it caught my eye. And then after I watched that, then obviously it was recommending some other
Godzilla stuff,
and I said, well, I read the description on the one versus King Ghidorah, and I was like, okay, that sounds somewhat interesting. And then I watched like the first 20 minutes of the movie and the concept of where they're going with it. It's like, okay, I mean, you could obviously smell it, what was going to happen a mile away. Even though I guess in a way the resolution was a little different. Actually, there were some twists and turns in that, not just because of, about how they kind of get rid of Godzilla to start with to get King Ghidorah where they want him to be, as in the time travelers, to end up needing Godzilla, just to end up needing King Ghidorah again because whoever is the good guy in like the 30 minute mark is not the good guy in the hour mark and not the good guy in the hour 30 mark. The constant heel and face turns in the movie was somewhat interesting by itself, but I did kind of like the fact that, because they changed slightly Godzilla's origin or his time frame for becoming Godzilla, that the personality of Godzilla, if you will, was altered, and that in a way made it worse. Yeah. So I thought that one was interesting, but both of them were pretty cool, I thought.
There's a specific itch that Godzilla movies, specifically classic Godzilla movies, scratch that really no other type of feature can. Wasn't there also a Shin Ultraman? I'm going to have to ask Daryl Banks about that, if he liked that.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it is definitely possible. But I thought that they were, both of those movies were entertaining, but I thought Shin Godzilla, it's not one of those movies that you can put on in the background. I mean, unless you're fluent in Japanese, because almost none of the movie is in English other than the aforementioned extremely attractive Japanese American character. Once in a while, she will speak English along with her counterparts will then, once in a while, they will have brief exchanges in actual English, but the majority of the movie is spoken in Japanese. So you're going to have to read the subtitles to get what's going on. But
I've got an amping excitement for Godzilla right now, just because there's lots of news coming out right now about two things. First, the next Godzilla movie in the Legacy universe, but also
Legendary.
And then Monarch season 2 is coming.
Oh yeah, that's
talking
right.
About how that's going to be focusing more on Kong, as opposed to the first season, which focused more on Godzilla. So that's amping up. But I don't have anything I've recently seen, but I will be starting some Christmas movie watching starting this week. Just as we roll into the holiday itself. I bought a movie last year I never ended up watching. I'm going to be watching this week 8-Bit Christmas, which I heard was pretty good.
Oh, I don't think I ever finished watching it, but actually, no, let me take that back. I might have watched that. I think there was another one. I think there was on HBO Max. I think I did watch that.
Yeah, Neil Patrick Harris is in it.
Yeah.
So, I things come in cycles for me. Like, you know, every now and then I'll rewatch for the millionth time, like the Numbers TV series or Fringe or whatever. Well, I do the same with books. And it's been a while since I've reread yet again the Anne Rice Vampire Chronicles, and I realized I never watched the second season of the AMC TV show. So I need to go back and watch the first season again, and then watch the second season right after, because also the news is coming out that, you know, 2026 we're going to have season 3, which is going to be actually called The Vampire Lestat, and it's going to be specifically focused on that part of his story where he's becoming a rock star and the whole Akasha stuff from like Queen of the Damned and all that starts happening, which is really exciting storytelling. So I'm going to be consuming some a new season of that. So I will have some What Has Chad Seen to chime in with you on. But I wanted to end the show on two Green Lantern notes. The first is probably it'll be exciting for you, but it requires a little bit of a visual. But have you seen, because this week, as we record this, the Green Lantern Corps 11 comes out. Have you seen the variant for Green Lantern Corps 11? One of the
variants? I know Sam Walker is on the cover.
Yeah. Do you like that? Are you excited about that? Are you going to?
I've only seen it in a small picture. I'm excited for anything that Sam Walker, because he even along with or Killer were the most shafted Green Lantern Corps characters, at least as far as the emotional spectrum cores go. I'm glad he's got a cover. It would be nice if we actually get to see friggin' something with Saint Walker. So maybe he can team up with Joe so she can lecture him about hope.
That's true. I do like it though, because it's and hopefully we get to see.
Ba-dum-bum.
Hopefully we get to see something like this that we see on this cover, because I sent you the link in our meeting here. I don't think there's a massive waterfall behind the blue battery. I don't think it has these big handles like it should, that it does on this cover. But it looks like he's back on Odom. And I think that looks pretty cool.
Yeah, the Odom that really shouldn't be anywhere. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And similar to those bird things he was hanging out with on Mogo.
Yeah.
During the sad sack St. Walker days.
Yeah, the last time we got a St. Walker-like cover, wasn't it him just holding his head in his hands while the creatures around him were kind of like, hey, what's your deal, bro?
I actually don't remember. It's been so long. Really don't remember.
Yeah. And then the final thing, it probably will upset you. Philip Kennedy Johnson is doing his Superman series, the House of L. What is it called? Adventures of Superman, Book of L. Have you heard about that series?
I think Anas has given me the play by play on all the stupid things that he's doing that are Lantern related that they shouldn't even be letting him touch, since he's not fucking writing a Green Lantern book currently.
So he put out a tweet saying that number 4 was out, and then tying in with Green Lantern War Journal, learn the fate of Ellie Stewart, Rowan Kent, and what happens when you awaken the God of Sun Eaters. And he puts some screenshots in here. And like one of the quotes from the book is, the Lightborn are the tribe I choose, and they call me the Shield of Lanternholm. But then this final one, and I'm not going to, like, we're not going to review this, guys, but like, uprooted from the besieged planet Oa and hidden in the uncharted space, it became the central element of the Lightborn civilization. To them, it is the most sacred place in creation. They call it Stewart's Crossing, the place where the first of their kind gave birth to an entire universe, where Ellie Stewart gave her life so her descendants might live forever. Look, when we talked about House of El, when we were talking about the potential of that Blue Lantern Corps, and weren't they talking about like some sort of tribe or something, like the way in which they pitched like how the lanterns worked in that House of El future state one shot we talked about seemed sort of interesting and intriguing. This just sucked all the interest right out of me. I'm sorry.
And he shouldn't be. And I don't know. I mean, I know it's what this is future stuff, right? So I know. I guess it lessens the fact that he really shouldn't be doing crap like this. But I don't know. All I can say is good luck at Marvel, and don't hurry to come back.
Yeah, I find it interesting. Maybe it's just because he is a popular S. Considered one of the top writers, but he's definitely upper echelon of recognized writer comic writer names. I'm just wondering how he's convincing DC to, you know, let him just somehow continue his story from book to book to book.
Yeah, it's yeah.
Because you have part of getting does a writer of his caliber, of his status or whatever. Does he even have to pitch to DC, or do they just say, hey, what do you want to do next?
I think, again, some of this comes down to, you know, if it's not nepotism, it's not what you know, it's who you know. If for some reason they like him, then they're going to let him do what he wants to do. And this is probably, so in a way it may speak more about DC editorial and where they are right now, then, because it's like, well, you know, the story really was, it's like war journals. Like, well, the story really was never about Green Lanterns to begin with, but he had to pick up on a story that he started in Superman because he wanted to finish it. So we'll make it a Green Lantern. We'll make it a Green Lantern story because I got this Green Lantern book. It's like, yeah, please, please no. And plus, in a way, when you think about it, the reason why they shouldn't be allowing him to do it is because it handcuffs. Theoretically, I mean, obviously this is down in the future, so whatever they do with Ellie today doesn't mean it can't happen tomorrow. But in a way, it almost makes whatever Jeremy or somebody else wants to do with Ellie irrelevant, because if you believe this is real continuity, if this isn't a like an Elseworlds or another universe story, that it's like, well, no matter what they do with Ellie now, she's destined to come back because of blah, 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 blah.
Well, I think nobody said this anywhere, but I'm thinking of it as if it's like a not future state, Future's End, when we got like eventual Blue Lantern Guy and Space Jesus Kyle and all of that stuff that never ended up happening because the future didn't end up going that way. But we saw possible futures.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
that's the way I'm seeing it.
I mean, you're probably right. It's just probably my unhappiness with the majority of what he was doing when it comes to stuff like that, that the idea of locking it into place theoretically, where it might be a hell of a lot more difficult for other writers to erase it now, just because it's like, well, it's supposed to happen down the road, but then again, Soto Miat is arguably in one of these universes that's supposed to be the last Green Lantern, and we haven't seen Soto Miat in a comic book. We haven't seen Soto Miat in a Green Lantern comic book since I think Venditti was writing him.
You're talking about Legion of Three Worlds when Sodom.
Yeah.
During Final Crisis. Yeah.
Yeah, Legion of Three Worlds. But we haven't seen since the Venditti Van Jensen issue but we have seen Sodom Yak because he showed up in a Superman storyline because he was an ambassador to whatchamacallit. Yeah.
But to be very clear, I actually like Philip Kennedy Johnson's writing, because like we talked about it during War Journal, it was fine up until we got to the Olgrin.
We liked
the characterization, we liked the emotional depth and thought that was put into his relationship with his mother as her mind was deteriorating. Like, there was a lot of good there, and there was some interesting stuff done with powers and stuff like that, but he just keeps circling back to this one story I don't care about, which makes it, by interconnecting all of them, it makes me not want to read whatever his next DC project is, because it's just going to be the same story I don't care about. Give me something new so I can enjoy your writing, as opposed to being frustrated by this continuation of the ongoing story from everything you've been touching at DC for the past, what is it, 3 years now? Four?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. It's odd. It's very odd, but, not anything we care about. So
yeah, that's all I got though. That's all. I just, you know, I saw that variant cover, and I saw that tweet from Philip Kennedy Johnson, and We're not going to cover it on the show, but we do tell you guys out there what's happening in Green Lantern elsewhere when we see it. And that's what's happening in Green Lantern elsewhere. If you want to pick up this House of L thing.
Godspeed.
In the meantime.
Yeah, in the meantime. So if you want to contact us, lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, #geocast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. And last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.